What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien, recording tonight from my office in Dedham, Massachusetts. Joining me, as always, the CEO of Hedge Better, Justin Fine. We are talking Patriots. We are talking NFL, an hour commercial free. We have an awesome episode planned tonight. A lot to talk about. A lot to get to about the 9-2 New England Patriots. Justin, my man, what is going on tonight?
Another great week to be Patriots fans, right? 9-2, everything's looking good. I think here in New England, it's just continued optimism, continued positivity. Things just keep rolling, and I'm loving it. And I don't think it's going to stop anytime soon.
Well, everything's coming up Patriots right this year. It's just like one of those years. We've certainly experienced a little bit of the opposite of that the last couple of years. But now, like with the news today that Ja'Marr Chase has been suspended, right. He hawks a loogie for some reason in Jalen Ramsey's face, and then like tells one of the most bald faced lies I can ever remember. Like literally brazenly says, "I didn't do it," right. Even though there is like unambiguous object, you can actually see in like no uncertain terms the loogie flying out of his mouth and hitting Jalen Ramsey. But that in of itself is just like one of those things where like, look, when you're hot, when things are going your way, it's just like things pile on, and now Chase not going to be available for Sunday. Another big break for the Pats.
Huge break for the Pats. You know, that helps immensely. Now I will say, side note, like, maybe it's just because it's happened with a couple of high profile players this year, but like, what's with like this recent trend of NFL players like spitting on each other, like grown men doing that to me? Like, that's so wild to me. I think it's like such a immature and disrespectful thing to do. Like, I hope that stopped becoming like the norm when guys get into beef on the football field now, you know?
Well, it might be just one of those things that you used to be able to get away with but now there's like so much high definition cameras everywhere that if you do it, it's going to get caught.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, you know what? Look, I always prefer to beat teams when they're at full strength. But you know what? Yeah. The way I look at it is, look, we're missing Milton Williams for a couple games, arguably one of our best players. If they go down Ja'Marr Chase, I look at that as just leveling the playing field a little bit. I'll take it.
Well, yeah. And I mean, like, I will say the spread is just makes no sense to me on Sunday. I mean, the Patriots, I think, are 8.5-point favorites, which is, I think, a crazy big number, and I think it makes no sense. And even without Ja'Marr Chase, I mean, this game kind of a trap game written all over it to me in Cincinnati. I know you have said that for several weeks now, that you had your eyes on this game as a trap game because Flacco can kind of still sling it at times, and they had Chase and Higgins. But, you know, obviously now without Chase, that does sort of level the playing field a little. I'll tell you right now, I like the Patriots this week, minus the 8.5, Justin. The line doesn't make sense. That makes me feel that, you know, Vegas wants you to take those points. They want people to take the Bengals.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? The Bengals at this point, they're really close to almost being mathematically eliminated. I think I saw them have like a 1% chance of making the playoffs, you know, something like that. So it's like, is Vegas also factoring in that the Bengals, after everything they've gone through, that defense being horrid, they're getting ready to kind of pack it in and call it a season?
Yeah, and it's getting to that time in the year where teams might actually legit start quitting, and the Bengals on the verge of being formally eliminated, their best player now suspended. I would say a potential lame duck coach situation with Zach Taylor. I think his job is very much in jeopardy. You know, they say Joe Burrow is going to be coming back in a few weeks. I don't know if that makes sense. I mean, maybe it does, but I wouldn't be surprised if they put him in bubble wrap till next year too. But it does feel like, you know, this does have the potential to be one of those situations where like the Bengals are kind of checking out.
Yeah, I think they're checking out if they're not already checked out, to be quite honest. And I agree. I think Joe Burrow should just, he should just rehab in stay healthy till next year. What good does bringing him back at this point do, especially if like you're mathematically, you know, 99% eliminated? Like, what's the point? Like, Joe Burrow's good enough. He doesn't need to come in and play a couple of meaningless games in order to, like, you know, keep his groove, so to speak, right? He's going to come back next year, and as long as he's healthy, he'll be just fine. So just keep him on the sidelines.
Yeah, and especially with his injury history, it's like, yeah, you know, you're real, you don't know. I mean, there are injuries that now that you get hurt in November and may not be ready for training camp next year. And this guy has a habit of having big injuries. So why would you even tempt it? You know, I mean, I think Zach Taylor might be, maybe he's coaching for a job. Maybe that's already a foregone conclusion. I feel like, look, it was a tough break that Burrow got hurt. I expected more from the Bengals this year, even without Joe Burrow, with Burrow missing a huge amount of time. I thought the Bengals could hang around 500 and still be a wild card team. I thought there was enough talent on that roster, and clearly that was completely wrong. I mean, they've completely fallen apart, and I think that it speaks very poorly to Zach Taylor's chances to be back next year as coach.
Yeah, and you know, we said for a while, it's very frustrating kind of watching that Bengals team almost waste away their talent during like the prime of their careers. And I just don't think it's going to get any better under Zach Taylor. I think you got to get rid of him. And this, I think, is shaping up to be a year where you may have some good coaches in the market that are looking for new homes, just the way things are, you know, shaping up.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it will come down to what Joe Burrow thinks about Zach Taylor, because, you know, if Burrow likes Taylor and wants him there, I think that will go a long way towards keeping him. And if the opposite is true, then I think that he is as good as gone. But like, look, honestly, at this point, the burden of proof is kind of on the Bengals to prove that they can build a team that is worthy of Joe Burrow. And they really haven't done that yet. So I feel like Burrow has a ton of leverage to kind of call his shot. And I believe he is a free agent after next year, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong on that, but I think there's some exit in his contract at some point coming up.
Yeah, he might be. I don't know if it was a 4 or 5 year deal. I think he's either on year 2 or 3 of that right now. So I mean, yeah, it could be coming up. But you know what? Yeah, you got to ask yourself if you're Joe Burrow. I get it. They gave you a good bag. They locked up your two receivers who are also, you know, your two close friends, Jamar and T. But I mean, at what point do you want to waste away your career in Cincinnati, missing the playoffs, having no defense, playing for an organization that, you know, has proven to kind of be, you know, stingy and not really in it to win it, so to speak?
Yeah, 100%. And just looked it up right now. Burrow did sign a 5-year extension, so he is committed through 29. But we all know that Burrow is the kind of player, just like with the NBA superstars now, he can kind of dictate his terms. If Joe Burrow wants out of Cincinnati, trust me, he's going to be able to get out of Cincinnati. And so I think the Bengals have a lot to prove to him, and I think that will affect Taylor's future. Yep. Let's actually talk, Justin, a little bit about the game on Thursday. We were there in attendance. It feels like ancient history now. It was 4 or 5 days ago. I'm going to kick it off with this. Look, to me, what the Patriots did on last Thursday night was it was just taking care of business. Yep. It was taking care of business. I think they went into that game, I don't think they were full throttle. I really don't. I think that they didn't want Drake May to get hit. I don't think they wanted to get Drake May hurt. I think they felt like they had the better team. I think they went in, they were matter of fact. They were kind of bare bones in their offense and what they did. I did not feel like they were super aggressive, and I think they should have been at times. I felt they went in, they did what they had to do. They took care of business. No one really got hurt, at least on the offensive side of the ball. They did lose Milton Williams, and they took the dub.
Yeah, they did. I mean, you know, we talked about that defense getting off to another slow start, right? We watched the Jets drive right down the field. But after that, the defense got a little stouter, right? I think the Jets only scored 7 more points, you know, one other touchdown or one other scoring drive the rest of that game. In May settled in, and he didn't really need to do anything crazy. I mean, Travion Henderson finds the end zone 3 times, right? The running game was doing its thing. And other than that, it looked like Drake was just kind of sitting back there comfortable, picking and choosing his spots, hit Stephon Diggs a bunch of times, Douglas, Hollins. You know, he was just kind of carving the Jets up at will. He didn't really need to do anything super wild.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that one of my take homes from this game is that I think the book is a little bit out on Drake May now, and I think it's going to be really interesting to see how he finishes this year. And that's not to say that he played a bad game on Thursday, because he didn't, but I think you saw what the Jets did on Thursday was like they sat back on defense. They didn't let May do anything deep, take any deep passes. They forced May to kind of dink and dunk him down the field, took away the explosive plays. and said, okay, Drake, if we're not going to let you throw the 30, 40, 50 yard bomb, really, but you're going to have to take it piece by piece to score. And I think you're going to see a lot of teams do that to the Pats down the stretch.
You might, but you know what? I'm not that, that's something that doesn't, it doesn't concern me, to be completely honest, because we've seen Drake May do that very efficiently. Like, you know, we talk about his long ball game, but his short yardage game has been equally as impressive in my mind. So, you know what? If you want death by a million paper cuts, I trust Drake May to sit back and do that. And especially if, you know, you're going to focus on taking the pass away in the deep ball. Now that, hopefully, knock on wood, we have a running game that's emerged. Travion Henderson has arrived. It's like that's going to take a lot of pressure off Drake as well.
It makes me think a lot of the Josh Allen, the way Bill Belichick used to defend Josh Allen, right?
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, he had this way of like, I'm not going to let him beat me deep and I'm going to make him dink and dunk me. And Allen was able to do it. And Allen ate Belichick alive in those last couple of years. And I think that's what May is going to have to do to a lot of these defensive coordinators for those three. I don't think you're going to see a ton of like the 50 yard bombs to Booty and Diggs and Pop that we were seeing in the last couple of months. I think defenses are going to sit back and take that away and make these guys beat them, you know, in small doses.
Yeah. And, but you know what, look, that's going to open up a whole new part of the field in a whole new aspect, you know, for this offense that they're going to be able to take advantage of. And I trust that when you got a guy like McDaniels, he's going to make adjustments and scheme, you know, appropriately so that if defenses do want to take that deep ball away, he's going to readjust and he's going to come at him with the game plan to get his playmakers the ball in space. And they're going to be able to, you know, do what they need to do.
100%. And I even think you saw it a little on Thursday that McDaniels was able to kind of find some answers to the way to the challenges of what the Jets had done with them.
Yes. 100%.
Let's talk a little bit about the Milton Williams loss from Thursday night. I think that is one of the big take homes and stories from the game on Thursday night. And I've been sitting here all season saying Milton Williams was a huge hit. I've been saying it was one of the best free agent signings in the history of the franchise. I've been saying maybe the best free agent signing in the league last year. So I'm not going to sit here and say that this isn't a huge loss when he goes out for 4 weeks. Do I think it's surmountable? Yes, I think they can overcome this. But I think this is a big loss. I mean, we said on the podcast last week, the run defense is the backbone of this team. I really believe that. Yeah. And they have a ton of depth at this position, yes, but they are losing a special player that I think he will be hard to replace.
I think it's a huge loss. You know, I mean, look, and I don't know if we're necessarily going to feel it that much against Cincinnati or against the Giants, but you know what? Then you got to go back-to-back weeks against Josh Allen and James Cook and then Lamar Jackson in Derrick Henry, right? The two best running quarterbacks in the league, two of the best running backs in the league, overall two of the best ground game attacks in the NFL. And so when you don't have Milton Williams to put pressure, the quarterback, clog up the middle, stuff the run, those are two teams that are built to expose that.
Yeah, 1,000%, Justin. Agree 1,000%. I looked to those two matchups. You know, the first thing I looked at when I saw they put Williams on IR is like, how long is he going to have to be out for? Is there any chance he can be back for Baltimore and Buffalo? And it is a little bit of bad timing that they're losing Williams with those two matchups looming. And, you know, there's now no chance he'll be back for them because I do think they're going to miss him in Baltimore and Buffalo.
Yeah, you know what? The only saving grace right now is that just you look at the two games before that and you look at the couple of games remaining after that, the Patriots have fortunately put themselves in a position where even if they were to drop those two games, they're still well within reach of winning the AFC East, getting the number one seed in the AFC. So it's like, you know, if worse comes to worse and they do drop those two games, you know, the Patriots should still find themselves in a good spot. But, you know, it just really sucks because I was really looking forward to seeing how, you know, they fare against the Bills a second time, right? How they do going into an environment like Baltimore and facing a team like that who's getting hot now and playing well. I mean, you can argue that those are two of maybe three teams that you fare and would have to potentially get through to win the AFC and get to a Super Bowl, right? So it would have been a great measuring stick seeing them at full strength. But with that being said, you know, I hope they're able to kind of keep it competitive. And if they're able to steal one of those two, then, I mean, I think, you know, that this team is for real, for real.
Well, that should be the expectation, that you take one of those two games, you know, and having Williams on the sideline, that is definitely going to hurt them. But they have some young players. I mean, Kyrie Tonga has been terrific. You know, Christian Barmo obviously is in of himself, I think, a number one sort of interior defensive lineman. Sure. They were lucky to have two, which is why, of those kind of guys, which is why they were setting NFL records for run defense. I mean, like, I don't think this run defense is going to be bad without Milton Williams. I just think it might not be exceptional. Yeah. And I think that one of the reasons they're in the position they're in, you know, we can talk about May and Vrabel and McDaniels, the run defense and the ability to control the line of scrimmage on defense is right up there with any of those reasons. Maybe not as spoken about as much, but it is absolutely, I think, one of the pillars of this team. Yeah. And it's definitely going to take a hit.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. I hope. And you know what? Look, this is going to be a great test for this team. Down Milton Williams, two tough opponents, back-to-back weeks. Are they able to rise to the occasion? I mean, I think it's going to tell everybody, you know, we know that the Patriots are a for real team, but are they going to be able to battle through adversity, you know, when they're not at full strength? And that's something that we've been talking about all year.
100%, Justin, 100%. I want to talk a little bit about one of the other, I think, huge stories from Sunday night. It clearly has been the emergence of Travion Henderson.
Yeah.
And I think Travion Henderson gives them something, the Patriots something, that they haven't had in years. And that is explosiveness, right? And you're seeing this guy not just be, you know, a sort of average run-of-the-mill garden variety back, but he has a next level of explosiveness, I think, that has the potential to add something major to this team coming down the stretch. You know, Patriots fans talk so much about Stevenson being this great back. I never really saw him as being like anything more than an above average back in this league. When I watch the way Henderson has played the last few weeks, I see a level of explosiveness and playmaking that makes me think of Jahmyr Gibbs. Yes. That makes me think of some of the real playmaking backs in this league. And I think it has the potential to really alter what this team can do in the postseason in a good way.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It's coming at the perfect time because, like you said, right, defenses are going to start adjusting to Drake May. You know, you get the injury to Ramondre Stevenson. I really do think that Travion Henderson is, you know, I don't think it's a fluke. I think it's real. I think he has arrived. I mean, you know, I know it's the preseason. I know it's college, but it's like, you know, you look back to this guy during his career at Ohio State, and then you look back to what you saw, you know, in the preseason and camp and in those, you know, those preseason games. And what you saw was a guy who was an explosive playmaker that I think we all had very high expectations for, right? We didn't get that the first half of the league. You know, maybe it took a Ramondre Stevenson injury to give him the opportunity, and maybe it took half a season to get him actually settled into the offense, into McDaniel's system, and to earn the trust of Vrabel. But whatever happens, he's here now. Five touchdowns over the last two games. He's showing that he can be a receiving threat. He can be, you know, obviously a rushing threat. Three down back with explosive speed, break tackle ability. And again, I think it just adds, like you said, a whole new layer to this offense that not only the Patriots didn't have earlier in the season, but that this Patriots team and organization hasn't had since I can remember. I mean, I was talking about it with some friends the other day. You know, we haven't had a true superstar running back in this team, I would argue, maybe since Corey Dillon. Right.
Yeah.
So
was a very brief run. But
right.
Yeah.
And that was a brief run. So, I mean, like, you know, if you can get a three down running back who can break tackles, be explosive, be a threat in the passing game, that can truly be a superstar, like a Jahmyr Gibbs, something like that. You know, that's huge for this offense and Drake May.
But what I love about Henderson is he does have that kind of Jahmyr Gibbs thing where he can take a 5 yard pass and turn into like a 40 yard pass just like that.
Yes. Yes. And one of the things that he can do, like a Jahmyr Gibbs, like you said, is he's got twitchy speed and he's explosive, but he's powerful too, right? Yes. He's not like a first contact's going to bring him down every time type of guy. Like he can deliver punishment. He can break tackles. He can make guys miss. So that type of ability is huge. I said it to you when we were at the game the other night. I'm okay with never seeing Ramondre Stevenson in a Patriots uniform again if we can get that type of play from Henderson.
Well, that's just it. And like you want to say this will be a powerful 1-2 punch in the postseason with Henderson and Stevenson. But then, you know, your thoughts immediately go to Stevenson fumbles the ball. Yeah. And do you want to be in Indianapolis in the divisional round of the playoffs or something? Right. And like, you're giving the ball to Stevenson and he coughs the ball up like that. No. You know what I mean? Like that you have to worry about that with Ramondre Stevenson. It's never going away. And it's like, I'm sorry. Like if Henderson is healthy, it's going to be hard to justify giving carries to Stevenson from Henderson the way that Henderson is playing right now and the way he's not a proven fumbler at the NFL level yet. And we know Stevenson is.
Well, even if you reverse the roles that they had at the beginning of the year, to your point, I don't even want Ramondre in there as like a relief or change of pace back. Like I don't want the ball going in his hand. Like in big games, my stomach would be in my throat watching this guy take a big touch, you know, on the goal line or trying to preserve a lead late in the second half. Like it just has it written all over him that he's going to cost us a big game at some point, like he did earlier in the season. If you can avoid that, I say you do. I think you're not getting anything out of him. You haven't been getting anything out of him that you can't get out of a Terrell Jennings or Ernest Johnson or somebody that can just safely come in for a couple downs and spell Stevens.
Henderson. Know what, Justin? I'm actually with you 1,000% on what you just said. And I love that take because you're right. Like from what we've seen from Terrell Jennings and D'Ernest Johnson, like let's stop overrating Ramondre Stevenson and making him into something he isn't. He's an okay back, but really is the delta between him and Jennings or D'Ernest Johnson that great to justify the fumbling? The answer is in my opinion, no. You're better off giving it to the safer option and just like the Ben Jarvis Green Ellis type, right? To use a name from the past, like nothing spectacular, didn't fumble, took what was there. Yep. Like if Terrell Jennings can be that, if D'Ernest Johnson can be that, you're probably better off with that than playing with the roll of the dice because Stevenson, maybe he's a little better than that. But if he coughs the ball up once, that's it. That's a game alter in play.
100%. And when you got someone like Henderson who's showing that he can be a three down back, you really only need those guys every couple of series to just come in and provide some brief relief. You don't need them to play a huge role. So, you know, again, I'm okay with keeping the ball out of Stevenson's hands, keeping him in the sidelines.
I'm with you 100%. No more Stevenson. We're on the same page here.
Yeah.
All right, I like it. This is why the people listen to this podcast, those innovative, cutting-edge takes. All right, let's talk a little bit about Will Campbell on Thursday night. Because you've seen the viral video, I'm sure everyone has, of him crushing the Jets defensive end, Clemens, Michael Clemens. Like, I thought that, you know, after the Cleveland game, I was a little worried about Campbell because that was bad, 5 sacks. And we had the conversation at the time. Was that just a little bit of a learning thing or is this something to worry about here? I think he actually has responded really well since that Cleveland game. I think he's played good game after good game. And I thought that in particular on Thursday night, Campbell was actually kind of dominant in the game on Thursday night. And I thought he was good against the Falcons in the box. So I feel really good about the direction Will Campbell's heading in, Justin.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, look, we said this at the time, the Myles Garrett thing, I chalk that up to being a fluke. You got a guy who's literally going up against the best player he's ever gone up against in his life. And it's not even close, like by a long shot, right? That was just a little bit of a learning curve like that. He needed to get exposed to somebody like that. He had never been exposed to somebody like that in college or through the first, whatever it was, 7 games of the season. So you know what? Yeah, he got exposed by one of the best defensive ends of all time. And that didn't really worry me that much. But like you said, the way he responded was good because he could have gotten his own head. You know, it could have started this downward spiral. And it did it. He's responded really well. And, you know, I think he'll be more prepared next time he's got to go up against somebody like that. But yeah, overall, I'm very pleased with Will Campbell. I think we've been pleasantly surprised with him all year. And I don't even want to say pleasantly surprised because I think both of us had pretty high expectations for him. Like we weren't worried like some other people were.
I said at the time, I wanted Ty Warren, Tyler Warren, the tight end, who has been really great in Indianapolis. But, you know, I didn't think the Campbell pick was a bad pick. I didn't really buy into the whole arm length nonsense. Right. And I mean, I feel like you look at his first 11 games, he's been really good. I mean, by and large, this guy's still a rookie and he's been able to be kind of plug and play.
Yep.
I think he started the year off as an average tackle. I think he's more or less gotten better. He had a big bump in the road with the Myles Garrett game. Since then, he's responded. He's thrived. He's playing at, I think, maybe a top 12, top 15 tackle level right now and going up every week. So Patriots fans should be encouraged, I think, with what this guy's been able to do as a rookie.
I totally agree. I mean, look, the left side of your line is what, 21 and 22 year old or 20, totally, something like that. You know what I mean? And, you know, it hasn't been perfect, but I think they've held up really well. And, you know, if you told me that, you know, going into this year, you were going to have four new pieces in that offensive line, including, you know, two young kids on the left side, like Drake May's blind side. Like I would have thought it would be, don't get me wrong, the line hasn't been perfect. The protection hasn't been perfect. They've been bad at times, but I would have thought it would have been a lot worse than it's been.
It seems like they're getting better. And I'll say one other thing, because we haven't even talked about this yet. The leadership Campbell brings is real.
Yeah.
And it's a part of the culture change for sure. Don't understate it. And the chemistry he has with Drake May is also real. And you're going to have a situation for the next few years here where you have May and Campbell as really the pillars of this locker room.
Yeah.
And that is a great place to be.
100%. He's a total, Will Campbell is a total Vrabel guy. Like you can understand why Vrabel fell in love with them during the draft process and wound up picking him. Like, you know, he's as sturdy as they come. The kid is just a rock mentally.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. No question about it. And it's been a factor in this culture change for sure. Let's take a second, Justin, to talk a little about the draft class from this year, because look, the drafting has been terrible here. That's how the Patriots got in this mess. This year looks like they crushed this draft class, right? Yeah. Right now, Campbell looks good. Henderson looks good.
Yeah.
Williams, I'm worried about. We'll talk about him in a second. Wilson's been good. Craig Woodson, I haven't said his name much. That's a good thing if you're a rookie safety, right?
Yeah.
And then they drafted a kicker who has been damn good. This kid, Bryant, the tackle, he has a chance. So, like, overall, this was the draft that they really needed to have, I think, this year.
Yeah, it was they were due. You know, they were due. And not only did they hit on guys that look like they – can be good, but they hit on guys that are having immediate day one impacts. Like, I mean, two of the guys we just talked about earlier in the show is being dominant on Thursday night, Will Campbell and Travion Henderson. So, you know, they're getting instant production out of these guys. It's not just a draft class that you hit on and say, you know, these guys are going to pay dividends in the future. Like they're paying dividends right now. So, looking back, I can't remember a lot of times in recent memory that the Patriots draft class has come in and had an immediate impact like that. You got to go back a while to find that.
A long time. You have to go back a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had some epic draft classes. Like you go back to those like Parcells years, like 90s draft. I mean, look at some of those names. You know, in 96, they pulled Lawyer Malloy, Terry Glenn, Dave Wallabaugh, who had like a 12-year career as a center. Like they've had some epic draft class. I mean, you might be talking about that kind of draft class here, you know? I mean, Kyle Williams, he's the one guy you worry about. And clearly he and Drake May are just completely not on the same page. And that was, I think, one of the bad things from Thursday night was that how off he looked. But, you know, you hope that maybe they can figure that out. You saw some of that playmaking ability he has against Tampa.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? Look, Josh McDaniels' offense – I think it's tough for rookie wide receivers to come in and you know,
yeah,
be great right out of the gate, right? I think once he kind of gets more comfortable in the offense, him and May have more, some more time to work together. I think the skill set is there, right? He's obviously fast. You know, he can make explosive plays as we saw against Tampa. So I think he's just got to get more comfortable with the offense, more comfortable with this quarterback. I'm not super, super concerned about him just yet.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I could spin that both ways. I mean, how many times over the years have we seen the Patriots draft or sign a receiver and it doesn't click for them from the beginning and they just never figure it out?
Yeah.
And that's my worry with Kyle Williams, because like we can point to so many names, like, you know, Chad Ochocinco to Aaron Dobson to, yeah. I mean, you could go on and on, draft picks, free agents, guys they brought in, that it's just like they just could never quite grasp Josh McDaniel's offense.
Yep.
And they never clicked with Brady. You know, you wonder if Kyle Williams is going to be one of those guys that just doesn't quite fit in with this offense. But it is early, so that maybe there's still a little hope, but I am worried about Williams.
Yeah, no, look, I get it. The concern, I get the concern. He, you know, he hasn't done, I think, quite what maybe some people thought he would. But I just think, you know, again, rookie receivers in this offense, I think he gets the grace of a little bit of time before we write him off.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I'm totally not writing him off yet.
Right.
And I wouldn't be surprised if he makes another big play or two coming down the stretch. Very quickly, Justin, let's talk about the defense. Overall, I thought they were good. The opening drive thing is just one of those weird things, and make sense of it because I can't. But they really locked down after that. Though the thing I'm more worried about than anything with them is the lack of turnovers. I know they produced a big one on Thursday night, but one turnover in the last three games, that's not going to cut it coming down the stretch in the postseason. There has to be better playmaking than that. And even that one fumble, I'm like, how did Justin Fields not recover that? It was like on the ground for like two seconds.
Right.
I don't know what the hell was going. There was no like push or pressure, but they did come up with a ball because it sat there for so long. So I'm worried about the lack of playmaking from this defense.
Yeah. Like you said, they've been kind of stout, but you know, the turnovers are definitely, definitely concerning. And you know, when you talk about the opening drive thing, I mean, look, it really hasn't bitten them in the butt too hard yet this season, but something tells me, you know, you go in the playoffs and you know, you play a Josh Allen or a Patrick Mahomes or somebody like that in the playoffs, you let them jump out to an early lead, start to build some momentum. You know, that can be the type of thing that you never recover from. So I as much as I want to see the defense start to force some turnovers, I also want to see them come out and get a damn stop on the opening drive, because I think you really have to when you play the better teams and the better quarterbacks.
Well, and to that point, like what's going to happen when they fall down 14-0 or 21-0? Like, we haven't seen this team in that situation yet. You know, when they really, we've seen 7-0, sure, but we haven't seen how Drake May will respond, how the young players in this team will respond if they really fall behind.
Yeah, exactly. So you know what, you don't want to see them. You don't want to see them have to be in that situation. You know what I mean? So I'd love to see the defense get off to faster starts, and like you said, get some more turnovers. But you know, they have been sturdy. They have been.
Let's talk a little about the Jets before we move to around the league, and just like, look, Justin Fields doesn't have it as a starting quarterback in this league. So apparent. That was a high school offense that we had to watch. In fact, I would say this, like if Justin Fields was anywhere, if they had a half decent NFL quarterback, if they played Tyrod Taylor, for example, that would have been a very close game because they just had no passing game whatsoever. And now they're going to Tyrod Taylor this week. So my prediction is completely coming true.
Yeah. I just don't understand what the point of like, you know, they're at the point in the season where it's like, you don't want to make it apparent that you're tanking, but you also like, why are you trying to pick up a couple meaningless wins here and there? You know what I mean? Like, I think they should sticking with Fields is the best thing for them. In terms of like, you know, like we were talking about their future, their future draft positioning. He's been so bad this year. I mean, he got negative 10 passing yards in a game. Like, how is that even possible, you know? Yeah. So, the Jets team, this Jets team is,
he missed a few just wide open throws. And even the one to Adonai Mitchell that supposedly Mitchell dropped.
Yeah.
And you know, like I'm telling you, that was a bad throw. That ball sailed and Mitchell had beaten Christian Gonzalez and a better quarterback, a better throw. That's a big play.
Yep. 100%. Yeah.
All right. You ready to move around the league? Anything else you want to say about the Pats?
No, let's do it. Yeah.
All right, man. All right, let's go. Let's move to around the league. I got nothing to say about Belichick this week. They did lose, I believe, to Wake Forest on Saturday. I don't think it's been very quiet. That's a good thing. So I'm not even going to do the Bill Belichick minute this week. But I want to start by, I don't know if I'm going to take medicine on this or not, but I thought we could talk about it, which is the Michael Penix trade revisited.
Okay.
Because he is now out for the year with a knee injury for the third time in his career between college and pro. So that was one of the real questions around Michael Penix going into this whole thing, this draft last year. Okay, he can't stay healthy, right? So now we have a situation. We debated this trade because we disagreed about it. And that's why I wanted to bring it up for this topic. Because I liked the trade. You didn't like the trade. What, Justin, now at this point, now that we see that Penix's injury history, his injury problems are not behind him, another devastating injury, your thoughts now on the Michael Penix trade that you panned initially 2 years ago?
Well, you know what? It's funny because you could say I was right about it, but I was right about it for the wrong reasons. Like I was right about it because I thought that Kirk Cousins, you know, you just paid him all that money, he was going to come in and be like a viable starter. And he's been awful any every chance he's gotten to play for them. But you know, you look at Michael Penix now, even when he's healthy, you know, he can't seem to be consistent. The Falcons seem to just be kind of idling is like in like the middle to lower to, you know, lower half of the league. And obviously now the injury concerns, big issue. I mean, you know, you look at that team, they got a really good young defense. They've hit on some great guys in the draft, signed some great guys in free agency. They've built a core to that offense. You know, you look at the weapons, Pitts, London, Bijan.
Beast wide receiver,
right? Like they got a good old line. Like they really have all the makings there. Like, you know, if we talk about sometime in a later episode, you know, free agent destinations or trade destinations for maybe some of these quarterbacks on the move, you got to look at Atlanta as being like one of the top places for one of these guys to go just because the infrastructure they have right now. But Penix has been super disappointing, man. Even just like watching him out there, like I watch him throw the ball and he's just bad. Like he's inaccurate. Like
He's inconsistent.
He is.
Like he made some really good throws in that Patriots game. He made some really bad throws as well.
Exactly.
And I walked away from that game saying, look, you know, I'm not saying Penix is a terrible quarterback, but I think he's a bottom half of the league starter. To me, what happened here a few weeks ago was more about Drake London than Michael Penix. Yeah. I think Penix has shown he's kind of an above average at best. That's his ceiling.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
And now you factor in a huge injury history and you're like, well, hey, I loved that trade when it happened. I argued for it. I said, hey, I love the aggressiveness. I love that the Falcons went in and saw that Penix was their guy and made that aggressive play for him. But what you've seen now on the field and now the injury stuff popping back up again, it feels like maybe that was a big mistake.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, let's talk, Justin, about the Broncos-Chiefs game from Sunday. And I'm sure like everyone else in New England, we watched the game together. You know, we were having mixed feelings, right? Like on one hand, I'm like, who should I be rooting for here, the Broncos or the Chiefs? And my take home from this game is this was a double loss for the Patriots, in my opinion. Like, first of all, we wanted the Chiefs to win that game, I think. And I don't think it's a good thing for the Patriots the Broncos won. But I would also say if anyone thinks the Chiefs aren't going to be in the playoffs – when this thing is all said and done, like open your friggin' eyes. The Jacksonville Jaguars and the Pittsburgh Steelers and the LA Chargers, there's no way the Chiefs aren't making the playoffs. And the one thing I do not want is I do not want the Chiefs coming to Foxborough in the first round of the playoffs, right? Because I'm sorry, I still respect the heck out of Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid, even though the team has a lot of holes. Guess what? So do the Patriots. I don't want to face that Chiefs team in Foxborough in the postseason. So I thought it was a double loss. The Broncos kept the number one seed, and it looks like if anything, the Chiefs are going to sneak in as the number seven seed. It's almost like it's a collision course to Foxborough now.
Yeah, for the reasons you just stated, I was rooting for the Chiefs, and you know, I almost never find myself rooting for the Chiefs, but I just, you know, kept saying to myself, even if they happen to lose, they are going to be in the playoffs. And so for that, you know, for those reasons, I'd like them to beat the Broncos so that the Patriots can get a game up. So, I mean, yeah, if by some miracle the Chiefs miss the playoffs, then I think we obviously look back at that and we say, look, I'd take being a game behind the Broncos in the seedings to avoid the risk of having to play a Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs, right? Like if that's how it pans out. But I just can't see a world that Chiefs team doesn't sneak in, you know, one way or another. So, you know, it was unfortunate. But you know what? That was a big game for the Broncos. You know, I think Patrick Mahomes was 12-1 versus the Broncos in his career. And I think the only win the Broncos had was last season. Something like that when, you know, the starters were sitting for Kansas City or something crazy like that. So that was big. That was big for Bo Nix. That was big for the Broncos. It almost all but locks up the AFC West for the Broncos.
Maybe I'm wrong, Justin, but I still do not fare the Indianapolis Colts. I do not fear them. I do not fear the quarterback. My take home from Sunday is I fear the Broncos now. That defense is really good.
Very good.
And now I've watched Bo Nix come back against both the teams that were in the Super Bowl in the last year's Super Bowl, the Eagles and the Chiefs, and beat them both in the fourth quarter. I'm sorry. You knew I was high on Bo Nix coming into the draft. I think he's proving me right. That Broncos team is legit. And if the Patriots somehow have to go up to Denver at any point in the postseason, that would scare me.
Yeah. I mean, look, Denver is very good. We said going into this year, Denver on paper probably has the best defense in the NFL. And they've played really well. You got to respect their head coach, a veteran who's won a Super Bowl, is a very respected head coach in this league. You know, in Bo Nix, you know, I get the criticisms at times, but look, he hasn't been too shabby. He's won some big games. That Broncos team is very solid. So, you know, I in a weird way though, I will say this: I still fear the Chiefs more than I fear the Broncos in the playoffs. Yeah,
to me that it depends on where that game is though, because if I'll take the Chiefs in Foxborough any day over Denver in Denver.
You think?
Personally, yes,
I mean, I'm looking at a Patriots team though that's undefeated on the road this year, right? So
true, but it's just like one of those things. Like the Patriots just don't win in Denver. I mean, look historically, and I know you can say it doesn't matter, but it's just we have such a bad track record in Denver. Like I do not want to go against that defense in that stadium. I just feel like that would be a tough game for the Pats to win.
Yeah, well, look, it would definitely be a tough game no matter what. But, I mean, look, the Patriots have just as good a chance as anybody to secure that number one seed and get a first-round bye and lock up home field advantage throughout the AFC playoffs, you know?
They do, and I think it underscores the importance of that, because I don't want the Patriots having to go to Denver. I don't want the Patriots to have to play Kansas City in the first round. Yeah. You know, I mean, you want that number one seed. It's why it's so important for them to win one of those two games in Buffalo or Baltimore. Let's talk a little bit, Justin, about the Detroit Lions and the performance on Sunday night in Philadelphia, because to me, what that performance said, I'm a Lions fan. Like outside of the Patriots, I'm rooting for that team. I like that team. I love the city. I love the story. I love Campbell. I've said many times on this podcast, Jared Goff is one of the most underrated players in the league. A lot of likable players on that team. All that said, I'm sorry. At some point, you have to be able to go out and win and score points outside if you're going to win a Super Bowl, especially when you're 6-4. When you're 6-4, you're not going to get to coast in your dome. Yep. It's not going to happen this year for the Lions. You're going to have to go out to an NFL stadium and win in cold and wind somewhere. That's how it's going to happen this year. And I don't know if the Lions can do that.
Lions are struggling. I like you said, I really like this Lions team. I'd like to think that they haven't, their Super Bowl window hasn't closed, right? I like to think they can still compete for them this year. But like you said, I mean, they have to prove they can win on the road. They have to prove they can win outside. I'm still not writing them off as contenders in the NFC, but I mean, you know, they're definitely not where I was hoping they would be at this point. I mean, you know, when I saw them a few weeks ago, you know, the way they had beaten Tampa Bay and the way they had won a couple of these other games, you know, they went into, they beat Baltimore in Baltimore. And I'm saying to myself, you know, this team's for real. This team's legit, but they're just struggling too much right now. I don't know what exactly it is, like, but yeah, I'm not super worried about the Lions right now.
Yeah, I am. I think their window is closing. I hate to say it. I want to be wrong on this one, but I just feel like they just don't have it this year. I mean, I think they're a playoff team. I just don't think they're a conference contender. So, and I think that if they have to go back to Philadelphia again,
right.
I just don't see any way that Detroit team is going to go into Philadelphia and beat that defense.
No, I agree. So like when I say I'm not worried about the Lions, I mean like from the viewpoint of another team in the NFC, like I'm not super worried about having to play the Lions in the playoffs, because like you said, they're probably going to be in the road and they've just proven to be super beatable. So yeah, I mean, look, right now I get it, the NFC is, you can call it wide open, but like, I mean, like, let's call it what it is. Like, you know, Philly back-to-back weeks, you know, made Green Bay look silly and made Detroit look silly. And it's funny because all we've been talking about is like the problems with the Philly offense and the antics, you know, AJ Brown and social media, and this isn't the team that we saw win a Super Bowl last year. Well, guess what? They're tied for the best record in the NFL. They're beating really good teams. And for all intents and purposes, they're healthy. So, you know what? This Philadelphia team is just as scary, if not scarier, than anybody else.
Right. Well, yes. And here's the thing. That defense is so good that the offense might not even really have to figure it out.
Right.
And they could still win a Super Bowl. But all that said, I still think the offense will figure it out. Mm. Like, yeah, we've been through this with Philly before. And it's not working right now. And then they figured it out.
Yeah.
I think that at some point this year, they're going to figure it out on offense. And I guarantee you, in the postseason, they're going to score points. And yes. I think what we've learned from the last 2 weeks, Justin, is that the Philadelphia Eagles are still very much the favorite to win the Super Bowl this year. They're still the best team in this league.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, yeah, they're so good, man. And they're just so talented. And it's like, you know what? When you've been there before, you're the defending champs. It's like, the fact that they haven't consistently put it together on offense, like, that doesn't bother me at all, because something just tells me when they get into the playoffs and they're hosting a playoff game, like, this team is going to snap into form, and Saquon Barkley is going to be Saquon Barkley.
Yep.
And Jalen Hurts and AJ Brown are going to be Jalen Hurts and AJ Brown. Like, I'm just not worried about them. I almost feel like this team is on cruise control until the playoffs.
Yep.
And even on cruise, and even on cruise control, they're better than 95% of the teams of the NFL.
And they went through this a little last year. I feel like we had some of these same conversations last year, and they still figured it out.
Yes. Yeah. So I think they're the clear favorites in the NFC right now. And let's Super Bowl favorites. Yeah.
Go ahead. Let's talk a little about, I think, their biggest competition in the NFC, and a team I thought that I mean, the Rams won a big game on Sunday against the Seahawks, but is it possible to win a game, to go 8-2 against another really good team and walk away from that game and actually have everyone feeling worse about you? Because when Sam Darnold turns the ball over 5 times to you and you need a missed field goal at the last second to go wide to win that game, that I mean, you look at that Seattle game and it's kind of funny because that Seattle Rams game, because you're like, okay, I actually feel worse about both teams walking out of that game, right? The Rams pissed away how many opportunities to turn that game into a blowout?
Yep.
And the Seahawks, you can't take seriously because Sam Darnold showed that he's still Sam Darnold, which is what you've been saying all year, to your credit. So it's just like a funny thing, but it was almost like a lose-lose from that Rams-Seahawks game.
Yeah, look, I mean, I like this Rams team, right? Just like you do. I know.
I do.
You know, the Rams obviously lost to the Eagles, and I think it was the divisional round last year. And I know a lot of people said that if it hadn't been for like the weather, they think that the Rams would have won that game. But you know, look, hindsight's hindsight. I do think the Rams are a very good team. We've talked about Sean McVay ad nauseum. We love Sean McVay. He's won a Super Bowl. He's a great head coach. You got a quarterback who's, you know, arguably playing at an MVP level. You have a really good young defense. Puka, Kyren, Davante Adams. Like, the Rams are the real deal. They're legit. But I think what they're showing you is that they are a very beatable team. You know what I mean? Like, they're not a super team. Like, they're not at the level of a Philadelphia. They're a very good team.
I think they have the talent to compete with Philadelphia.
I agree.
But when you let Sam Darnold, you know, get away with 5 turnovers and you don't capitalize on that, that's just a bad look.
It is a bad look. I mean, look, you know, it's a divisional game. It's, you know, you're going up against a Seahawks defense that I think is the top 5 unit in the NFL. So, you know, I get it. It may be easier said than done. But by the same token, you know, I agree. I think if, you know, you're ranking the NFC right now, I know they have the same record, but to me, Philly is clearly ahead of the Rams in terms of talent and potential.
Agreed. I mean, Philly's ahead of everyone. In the league right now. They are the best team going into the stretch here. Let's talk a little bit about Shedeur Sanders, who got on the field for the first time on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And what I'm going to say about Sanders is that, look, it's really easy to kick a guy when he's down. And you know, I always liked him going into the draft, and I don't understand why people have such enmity towards him. Yeah. It doesn't make sense to me. He was 4-16. He threw a bad pick. Look at his last 6 or 7 passes in that game. He threw a couple nice passes. That was his first time walking on an NFL field in a meaningful game. He hadn't taken any snaps. Shame on the Browns coaches with the starting unit. Okay. Totally unprepared. Totally inexperienced. Don't give up yet on Shedeur Sanders is what my take is today.
No, I don't think you can give up on him, because I just don't think he's had enough opportunity to write him off. Like, look, there's still something going on in that organization, like between him and the coach or the owners or something in that locker room. There's still something very weird going on. I don't quite know what it is. We keep going back to, did he rub people the wrong way in the draft process?
Right.
And is that still lingering? Is that still an issue for him? But, you know, for whatever it is, they got a hair across their butts with this kid, but now he's forced to play by default, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, they don't really have a choice. Option. Yeah. So it's up to him now to make the most of this opportunity, right? It's like, you know, the old saying, like, you can't be denied. Right. Like, he has the option right now to say, hey, whatever you thought of me, whatever you're holding against me, you can't deny me right now, because I'm going to go out and play and prove that I deserve to be in this field. And I get it. You know, against a Baltimore team, that's kind of tough to do, and especially getting thrust into there. You know, you weren't the planned starter. But moving forward, I'm not sure the severity of Dylan Gabriel's injury, but if he misses a couple games, like, this is the opportunity that Shedeur Sanders should be waiting for in relishing. And that's, hey, I'm the guy right now by default, and I got an opportunity to go out there and make a name for myself and do something where they can't deny me.
I agree. And don't be surprised if he has a good game coming down the stretch or two, if he is able to play. You know, look, the difference between Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders, and you can see it on Sunday, even though Sanders played very poorly, is that Sanders just has much more talent than Dylan Gabriel. Yeah. Dylan Gabriel is a fringe NFL backup, in my opinion. He's averaging 5.1 yards per attempt. 5.1 yards. That's historically bad. Sanders obviously was clueless, completely clueless when he got out there. You could tell he had no idea what he was doing.
Yeah.
Was completely overwhelmed by the speed of the game. I think that's all expected, given the situation he's in. And oh, by the way, he's in a franchise, in an organization that's like a place where quarterbacks go to die, right?
Yeah.
And the best part of this whole thing, Justin, is that they have a guy who I guess is healthy, right? who's making like $40 million a year, and Deshaun Watson. Where's Deshaun Watson? He's in like the witness protection program. Like you're down to Shedeur Sanders, Dylan Gabriel, Joe, you know, you traded Joe Flacco, and you still won't put Deshaun Watson on the field?
Yeah, that's, I mean, they just have the most bizarre of bizarre situations going on in Cleveland right now. Yeah, I Deshaun Watson, until you said that, I almost forgot he was on that roster. Right. You know what I mean? Like, it's so wild. Dylan Gabriel, I think, is the epitome of a college quarterback. Like, he is a guy that played at the college level where his athleticism, his skill set just doesn't translate to an NFL football field in an NFL role. But Shedeur is clearly physically and athletic, you know, athletically, talent wise, a better quarterback than Dylan Gabriel. So, you know, I think between Shedeur Sanders and Deshaun Watson, again, both of them, you know, kind of maybe needing to play by default at this point, especially depending on what happens to Shedeur. I think it's going to be very interesting. Like, I personally am still curious, can Deshaun Watson still play? Like,
I guess he re-tore his Achilles in January, and the initial injury was last October. But it's like, I don't know. I feel like that's probably BS. I really do. I feel like they're just finding a reason to keep this guy off the field because for whatever reason, they don't want him to take the field. But it's like, dude, is it that bad? I mean, it must be. If Deshaun Watson with one leg, I think, would be better than Dylan Gabriel.
100%. But you know what? Look, I'm looking forward to Shedeur Sanders, again, by default, getting a chance. Like, I want to see him out there.
I am too. And like, I'm rooting for him. And I think the Browns fans are rooting for him. But if you saw some of the shots of Kevin Stefanski's face, I can tell you one person that wasn't looking forward to Shedeur Sanders playing, and that was Kevin Stefanski, and I think a lot of his teammates too, because there was a lot of eye rolls and a lot of sighs and a lot of, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know what? At least the one thing I'll say in his favor is the fact that when they asked him how he thought he played after the game, he admittedly said, "I didn't play well. I played poorly." Right. And I feel like it would have been such a Shedeur thing, just given what we know about like him and his ego, to be like, "Yeah, you know, I was fine. Blah blah blah. My teammates didn't do this." And you know what I mean? Like, he had every opportunity.
Would have been like that guy in Iraq, Baghdad Bob, like when the U.S. troops were like running into Baghdad, and he was like, "There's no invasion. There's no invasion." It's like, how can you deny it? You were 4-16 with a pick. Of course, you played bad.
Exactly. So you know what? Look, whatever it is, whether he totally goes out to the next couple of games and craps his pants, or whether he figures it out and goes out to the next couple of games and, like we said, puts himself in a situation where he can't be denied, whatever it is, at least we'll finally get an answer and stop just wondering if the only thing that's keeping him off the field is some sort of vendetta.
Yeah, 100%. All right, one more take for you, then we'll wrap it up. Buffalo Bills, Justin, still very much alive in the AFC East after that win on Sunday. Again, I think that was a no-brainer. We were all rooting for Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
That game was there for the taking for Tampa Bay. I thought that line made no sense going into the game. Bills by 6, that felt really like a big line, which is why I almost took the Bills. But quite honestly, being a Patriots fan, didn't have the heart to do it because I'm rooting against Buffalo. So I stayed away from the game, but you know, Buffalo, I think Josh Allen showed why he is an MVP caliber quarterback and why he's still in the MVP race. I thought that was a statement a little bit from Buffalo, like, hey, this isn't over yet.
No, it's not. I mean, Buffalo is still a dangerous team.
7-3. It's not like they're 5-5 or something.
Yeah. But you know, the one thing that, again, I can't wrap my head around is, you know, how do you go from, you know, being a team that's capable of going out there and beating one of the better NFL teams in the league, and Josh Allen puts up 6 total touchdowns, and you know, you win by I think it was like 2 scores, something like that, against what's a really good Tampa Bay team, to then losing by like 2 scores, you know, to a Miami team that's, you know, all but hopeless. It's like, this Bills team has something going on where, like, you know, you talk about their talent and their potential. Well, they've shown that they have the potential to come out and be one of the worst teams in the league at times too. So that's what I can't figure out with them, is like, what dictates whether you're coming out and getting a game like they played against Miami or a game like they played against Tampa. It's just, it's a wild thing to me.
Well, to your credit, to the credit of your boy there, Mike McDaniels, I mean, Miami really hasn't quit. And you saw that again on Sunday against the Commanders. And I mean, look, I think it was a classic letdown trap game for Buffalo, kind of sandwiched in between a Kansas City game and a big Tampa Bay game.
Yeah.
And who knows? I mean, they probably get caught up. They were probably partying on South Beach on the night before the game, and they looked like they were partying. And I think it was just a classic trap letdown game, and they got caught off guard.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's what you're going to chalk it up to, because they looked like they're still, you know, they're still fighting. I mean, you know what? I would honestly even say that, you know, it's funny because, you know, to kind of tie it all together with a couple of teams we talked about, it's like, you know, we've been saying that the AFC is wide open, the AFC is weak, but I mean, look, the Bills, the Ravens and the Chiefs, you know, all three of those teams that we were, you know, kind of dumping on a little bit earlier in the year for having their issues, like those are still three dangerous teams that I don't want to play in the playoffs.
I 1,000%. And I would almost say that I fear those three teams probably more than I fear the Colts, you know, for sure.
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely
100%. Yeah. I mean, let's just talk quickly about Mike McDaniels, because you predicted him to be the first coach fired. And I don't know if you watched the game on Sunday, but like that, he was like teetering. Like he made some reckless, crazy decisions at the end of that game.
Yeah.
Where if Miami didn't win that game, he probably, that would have been it for him. Like I'm specifically thinking about an opportunity to kick a go-ahead field goal in the final 2 minutes of the game and going for it on fourth down. That's just, I'm sorry, that's reckless. And it almost burned him big time.
I mean, look, I'm going to start calling Mike McDaniel the cockroach, because it doesn't seem like you could kill this guy. He finds a way to stay around, man. And totally. I thought he was going to be out of here a long time ago. Like you referenced, to his credit, the Dolphins have not quit. I mean, I think they've won like three out of their last four games.
They have.
So, you know, whatever he's doing, you know, it's not, I guess, as bad as we thought it was early on in the year. I'd be shocked if they bring him back. Like, I mean, you know, at this point I get letting them maybe finish out the season. They maybe made it through the worst stretch that they had played, but I just can't see a world in which you bring this guy back next year. You know,
I know, but with you got, I mean, just to make the case for it, like you've got a Tua back and they've clicked in the past and it's worked in the past. You're stuck with Tua. I mean, I think that's the case to keep Mike McDaniels is, you know, you surround them with talent. Maybe you get Tyreek Hill back and you keep a guy that you know can get the best out of Tua.
Well, look, as a Patriots fan, I hope they keep him around, because if you keep him around, that to me is just guaranteeing that, you know, the Dolphins are going to be the bottom half of the AFC East. So fine. But just a guy who I think has survived too many close calls for comfort going back this season and last season. The fact that he still has a job again, it's wild to me.
Yeah, it is. It's really, it's crazy. I mean, like we all thought he was going to be fired in October when they were kind of falling apart there. And here he is. He's not getting fired this season. If he gets fired on January 8th or whatever, maybe, but it doesn't look like they're getting rid of him anytime soon.
Yeah. 100%.
All right, man. Anything else before we wrap it up?
No, I think that about does it.
Awesome. All right. Well, listen, we want to thank everyone that listened to this episode of the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots podcast. Have a great week, everyone. Enjoy the week. Enjoy these games coming up. Enjoy the Patriots on Sunday. I think it'll be a big win for the Pats on Sunday. But let's see what happens. And then we'll take it into the Giants game. And then a bye week. So that's the path ahead. But enjoy the rest of the season. We'll catch you all next week with another episode. Be good, everyone. Be healthy. Be well. Be safe.